everybody. My name is Carmen Guerrero and I live in Mesa, Arizona. And this is like our, I'd say our 10th time coming to Holden. And it's also our first time without our children. So I feel like I'm having the empty nest syndrome, big time here. Before I brought the kids when they were little and labor intensive, and then when they were teenagers and we didn't see them for days. And now they're young adults. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome. No problem. Happy to be here.
Well, come on, there's plenty of room in this side of the chairs in this side of the room, and you want to see the PowerPoint I have.
There's a video.
Jody doesn't do all of that.
I know.
Yeah, we don't want you to feel lonely. Thank you very much.
All right.
You probably feel like that.
This afternoon, I'm talking about something that I think all of us kind of like appreciate to a certain extent: art, passion, and politics, you know. And my question as an artist that I have is art politics? Is politics art? Sometimes I think that politics is just theater. When you think what people do is say just because they have that 5 minutes of notoriety, that they can address whatever they can. But I wanted to start talking about, this is a presentation that I made 3 years ago when Frida Kahlo would have been 100 years old. So that's why July 7, 2000, she was born in July 7, 1907 in Mexico City. And she's an incredible woman because she is of mixed race. Her father was a German Jewish photographer. Her mother was an Indian woman from Oaxaca. So she was mestiza, that's what we call it. And I identify with her beginning right there because I have Portuguese ancestry. I was born and raised in Brazil. And my father is Camiva, from the Camiva Indian tribe in northern Brazil. So I have that, you know, double mestiçagem in my life as well. Frida was an incredible painter on her own. She painted incredible things like life stills, but most of all, she painted herself. She suffered tremendously. And I think in her painting, she tried to recreate herself. Here's a picture of her. She was like 17, 18 years old here. She was very exotic. She was very petite, like even shorter than me. She was only 4'10". I'm 5'1", so a little bit taller than her. And she wore all kinds of jewelry. These pieces of jewelry she's wearing are actually pre-Columbian pieces of jade. She was married to a very famous artist in Mexico called Diego Rivera, who was about 30 years her senior and also a very big man in Mexico and in the world, recognized for his artwork. And he collected all kinds of pre-Columbian pieces and artifacts, and she was very proud of wearing them all. She also tried to hide. She had suffered with polio when she was little. She was 8 years old. She was attacked by polio, and she could never really walk after that. She had one leg shorter than the other. So she was given to wearing all those big skirts to hide her short leg. And so the first time she married Diego Rivera was in 1929. They got married in San Francisco, California. And she was like 20 years old, and he was already over 40 years old, a very established man. And here is the picture of her, the wedding. She used to wear all these embroidery dresses from Mexico, very indigenous looking, and put a lot of jewelry on herself. And here you see the difference in their size. She's very petite, and he's a huge man. And that was also in their life. Nobody knew she was an artist. She was just painting for herself. And he was very well known, worldwide known. He had lived in Russia, he had come to the United States, he had lived in France, so he was very, very well known when he married her. He also was married before, had children, and Frida could never have children because what happened to her at 18, she was in a streetcar and there was an accident and she was impaled by the streetcar and she was broken her pelvis. And she had over 30 operations during her life. So most of her time, she was in her bed, in her back, painting. That's all that she did. Painting was her healing. her way of, and this is a picture of her about a few months before she died. She was in a wheelchair, and in her house, the Casa Azul, she painted the house blue. And there, this is the first painting, it's going faster than I can talk. This is the first painting that she ever did for Diego. She was 17 years old when she painted this portrait of herself. And it was the first time she ever painted herself. And then these are paintings of herself. Like here's, again, she's wearing one of those pre-Columbian pieces in her neck. And she painted herself, very indigenous looking. Here she painted her grandparents, her parents, and her. And you see how this is her indigenous grandma, indigenous mother with the indigenous grandparents. And here the European grandparents on the side of her father. Oops, now I'm going too fast. So she and this is her blue house, La Casa Azul, where she was born and she was raised and she died in that house. So she was just looking at her own life. Painting for her was a way of looking at her own life. Here she is again painting herself when she got married to Diego, and you see how little she is with those big skirts and how big he is with his painting. She painted a lot of herself thinking about him and crying. And she put thorns in herself because she was always in a lot of pain, physical and otherwise, because he would just abandon her. He was a philanderer. He was going around partying and having affairs with Mexican movie stars like Maria Felix and all of that, and she was just alone. This is a little girl that she painted, and she painted. She also dealt a lot with the theme of death in her paintings because she felt death was just around the corner for her at any minute because of her condition. You know, having had polio, having suffered the accident, and having been bedridden. You know, at the end of her life, she ended up losing her foot. Her left foot had to be cut off because she had gangrene in it. But she suffered physical ailments all her life. Yet her painting, she tries to portray herself very stoic, very brave, and very beautiful. Actually, she paints herself more beautiful than she really was. Don't we all wish we could do that? Okay, so here's another picture that she painted about Mexico. She was very passionate about Mexico. And the four inhabitants of Mexico, we see the workers over here, we see the little girl, we see the statue, oops, and we see the skeleton that's walking around in Mexico, just ready to take anybody who's ready to go. So she, these are, you know, her Mexico, her homeland, you know, these are the people that inhabited her, not just her fantasy, but also her life. Yes.
Could you explain that third figure?
Yeah. The pre-Columbian woman here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the Olmec paintings and sculptures were very large, very big, and they were made out of stone. So that's what she was trying to put in there.
That's a fertility piece.
A fertility piece. Mm-hmm. And fertility was always in her mind because she was never able, she got pregnant a few times, but she was never able to have the baby because she had a broken pelvis, a broken back. She had many operations, and you can imagine in the 30s and the 40s, how rudimentary those operations must have been and how much pain she was in all the time. Here we see she painted herself asleep and death is just on top of her bed. As a matter of fact, if you ever go to Mexico City to visit her house that became a museum, she has that puppet on top of the bed, on top of the canopy. Oops. Right there. Because she felt that her companion was actually her death. So she had this intimate relationship with the fact that she was going to leave us pretty soon. And it's very Mexican to deal with death that way. Mexicans have lots of songs and lots of folk tales about how death is always on the, over your left shoulder. So you live life knowing that any minute you're going to be taken. So they make fun of death, they paint it like she does, and they, on the Dia de los Muertos, they go out, all out. Nobody goes out like the Mexicans do to celebrate the Day of the Dead. They honor their ancestors, but they also celebrate the fact that we're here just one little tiny minute. So that was Frida painting herself. Here we see her painting herself as an indigenous woman, very plain with the wipi, hand embroidered, and a little white doll because that's the only dolls they had back then. That's, you know. And here we see her painted, this is the painting that she gave to Trotsky when he came to Mexico. And here she's painted as a white woman or an European person with this very embroidery, it's going faster than I can talk. You know, her dress and her pose and the way she's holding herself, very European. And again, that's where the politics comes in. Diego and her were very active in the Communist Party of Mexico. They were holding meetings and demonstrations. And so when Trotsky was expelled from Russia, they worked with the Mexican government to bring Trotsky to Mexico. And they hosted him. They stayed in a house just down the street from their house. They became their friends. And supposedly, she had an affair with Trotsky. And Trotsky and his wife were assassinated by, supposedly, Siqueiros, the other big muralist in Mexico, and some of their friends, about 2 years after he had come to Mexico. But this is the painting that she gave to him. And in the letters right there, she dedicated to Trotsky. Here's another painting of herself, and very typically Mexican with flowers and birds. And there's lots of folk art in Mexico that resembles this painting of herself. And here's another one when she cut off her hair. Diego would leave her for months at times. He'd get commissions and go to Europe. And she'd be alone and very desperate. So she would go into bouts of depression. Here we see what I was talking about. She always had showed her suffering in her paintings. You know, you see this beautiful face, and then all the animals and all the life that she could put in a painting, she would do it. Like when you think about how many animals, I had one of my kids say that there's 15 different animals in that painting. You know, because that exuberance of life is what she wanted to signify in her painting. She was surrounded by it, but yet you see the hummingbird kind of dead there in her neck, and all those thorns around her. Here's another painting of her with parrots. And she spent, like I said, she spent a lot of time by herself, so she had no other subject matter but herself. So a lot of her paintings are her own reflection of herself, her thought process about herself. And here she is with monkeys again.
What was around her neck?
Like bone necklace, you know, she used a lot of pre-Columbian jewelry. So it's a bone necklace that she has. Looks like a snake too. She was given to have lots of pets like monkeys and deer in her house in Mexico City. And she had lots of animals around her. Here she paints herself as the deer that's being hunted, you know. And you see the suffering right there, the bleeding. Yet her face does not show much emotion, it's just her body. She and here's another, after she went and had another one of those horrible operations, she had to wear a brace all the time. This is what she's holding right there. And you see the scars. Oh, you see the scars right here in her back. Oops, go back there. And she says over here, she says, tree of hope, keep strong. And she dealt with this whole issue of duality. Not just duality of being half Indian, half white, but also night and day, being healthy and happy and unhealthy, having a body that looked perfect when she dressed up and she painted herself, but then also the paint that she was in there. And then you see how the anonymous face that she puts in there, like somebody, the suffering that she tries to show in her paintings. She wore this brace over here most of the time in her life because she couldn't stand up. Her column, her back was broken a few times. Here's another painting that where she explores the theme of duality also, and you see one giving blood or giving the heart to the other one, and they're dressed differently, one very Indian looking, another one very European, one very white, the other one very brown. So she was that was her reality. That's where she lived, in that duality. She came to the United States. Her husband, Diego, was hired by Rockefeller to do some murals in Detroit. And this is when she came to Detroit. She was very excited to see the Industrial Revolution because it hadn't come to Mexico. This is in 1930s and 1940s. Actually, it says over here, 1931, I think. That's when she came. And you see the smokestacks, the American flag over there, all the, and then we see Mexico over here, sort of like very primitive, the pyramids, the remains of the pyramids, the remains of the artifacts from the indigenous past, and she's kind of caught in the middle, you know, holding a Mexican flag. She yearned for Mexico. She missed Mexico so much. But yet she liked being in the United States and looking at how everything was so modern, how everything was going so well, and how the Industrial Revolution was taking place right here. Here is, she's in a bathtub, and she painted her feet in a bathtub, and all the things that was in her mind inside the water. So she painted, oops, let me get back again. She painted her parents right here. She painted herself in pain, the duality, two Fridas right here, and the things that she missed, her dresses from Mexico. So this is a reflection on her. She'd spend hours, she couldn't move. She was just, and then the building in, she was a friend of the woman who committed suicide from the Luz family. So this is the, she was very impressed with the big buildings in New York City when she went to New York City. And then it became part of, so she has the volcano in Mexico and the building in
that
New York City.
That was I can't remember her name, but she had an affair with Diego.
Diego, of course.
And then Frida had an affair with her, and then she threw herself off the Empire State Building. Right?
That's right, the Empire State Building, exactly. So her life had lots of drama, because Diego was just everybody, and here she is as a Mother Earth figure, you know, trying to, she knew that she was going to go back to be dust again and be Earth again, so that's how she painted herself in it. And here's a really interesting picture. I love this picture because it shows her holding Diego, this big overgrown baby, and then there's Mother Earth holding her, and then you see the duality, oops, night and day. Sorry. Okay, here. You see the duality, night and day, and you see the Mother Earth holding everything together. You know, two hands over here, see? Holding, the universe is holding them together. Yes.
Where are most of the originals?
Most of the originals are in private collections. Madonna owns a few of them. The Louvre in France owns a few of them. There's a couple of them in Phoenix Art Museum, where we come from. The San Francisco Art Museum has. I mean, she's one of the most collected artists, you know, women artists in the world. Her painting sells for millions of dollars.
You could say she's the most famous female artist in the world.
Yeah, she's the most famous female artist in the world, exactly. But she was not famous when she was alive. It was after she died, actually after 30 years after she had died, that everybody started discovering her. But her paintings are, you know, all this psychological, you know, pictorial imagery of herself and her world and how she saw herself and the cactus.
When was she born and when did she die? What was her time frame?
Okay, she was born in Mexico, in Coyoacán, Mexico, in July 7th, 1907. And she died in Mexico City in 1954.
Okay.
She was barely 47 years old when she died.
Because most of what you said was like in the 30s, you know, the Great Depression. I mean,
yes. She was in America during the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Her husband was part of the WPA administrative works, and he made big murals. He was a very controversial artist also, Diego. Some of his murals were painted over after he painted. You know, he painted some of the Rockefeller Center downtown in New York City, and he painted some in Detroit, and then he went to the San Francisco area, and she accompanied him on those trips. So she has a very short life. She only lived 47 years. And here's another picture of herself. Again, she let her hair go. She's wearing a wipil. That's what we call these very simple Indian dresses. And then you see a cactus plant right there. You know, here's another one where she makes herself very European looking. But again, she talks, you know, you see the suffering right there, the thorns, and the hand, and the flowers. And over here, this is 1938. This one over here. Next. Here she's another picture of herself. So these pictures it was in her house. Nobody even knew about it. She never showed anybody because she was embarrassed. Her husband was such a big artist. Everybody paid attention to him. He was a painter. She was just somebody who dabbled in art, like a nun. Nobody really knew about it until she went to France. And then they started talking about her like she was a big artist. Oh, I have to. She got a show of her own for the first time. Okay, where am I? Okay, this is the other one. She loved to model Mexican clothing from different villages, from different areas of Mexico. Every village in Mexico, the women dress in a certain way. So this village here in Oaxaca, they all dress in this white lepis with a little bit of embroidery right here. And some other places, they had big, big dresses. Here she is with a little tiny Chihuahua dog. And she smoked. She was very scandalous. She drank a lot of tequila. She would get drunk. She would go out and party. And she smoked, which was very frowned upon in those times in Mexico. One time she caught Diego with her sister, Cristina. They had a hot affair. And she cut off all her hair. And here is the painting showing all her hair. And she even wrote a song. And she says, the song on top says, mira que no que si te quise fue por el pelo. Ahora que soy pelona ya no te quiero. And she says, I liked you because I had hair. Now that I don't have any hair, I don't like you anymore. Mm-hmm. This is another wonderful outfit from the Tijuana part of Oaxaca, Mexico, when she would wear it. And again, her whole mindset, her whole thought process was always thinking about Diego, her husband.
Was it just before divorce what became acceptable in Mexico? So they didn't divorce or anything like that?
They did divorce.
They did divorce.
And then they remarried. Yeah.
All right.
She was not a religious person.
Okay.
You know, her father was Jewish and her mother was native, Oaxaqueña. Her mother was from Oaxaca, very humble woman from the Indian village.
Okay.
So she rejected religion and she was just she didn't care about divorce.
Was communism.
Her religion was communism. That's why.
Okay, but then in the Mexican government, like during her time, was Mexico a communist country or?
No, Mexico was not a communist country, but they had a very active communist party. Yes.
So then, was divorce legal? Like, was it?
She got divorced in America. She got married in San Francisco. And then 10 years later, she got divorced.
Okay.
And then she got married again in New York, like 20 years later, to the same guy.
Okay.
So they never got divorced or married in Mexico. They got divorced and married in the U.S.
Okay.
And then Diego and all the artists back then in the 30s were very active in the Communist Party in Mexico.
Yeah.
Siqueiros, Diego Rivera, all of them were part of the movement. You know, they use art to tell people about the history of the worker, history of oppression. And so she was very much into that whole movement of utilizing murals to educate the masses. They rebelled against having art just in museums. They wanted the art on the public spaces for the people to see. So they painted murals outside all of those Mexico City buildings. You know, all the buildings, they painted on it so people could see the art. They didn't want the art behind walls in museums. So she was part of that whole movement. Here's another one that she painted herself, and you can see that she's crying. You see just a few tears in her eyes. So you can just imagine the pain, the suffering that she went through, not only physical, but also from all the hurt that Diego caused to her, because he was going out with anybody he could. You know, he was very rambunctious, yes.
Was her father European?
Yes, her father was a German Jewish photographer. And he's the one who helped her paint. When she got hurt in the trolley car accident and she was bedridden, she couldn't leave. So he just gave her canvas and just paint, do something. And he encouraged her to express herself through painting. But yeah, she was half European in her father's side and indigenous in her mother's side. Here is a page of her diary. Her diary is a book out, you know, it's you can buy it right now, but she had all these dreams and all these very weird looking paintings. And it was always Diego, I'm alone. Every other page of her diary, she made reference to the fact that she was alone, nobody was there, and Diego was out and about in the world and not taking her. Here's another page of her diaries. She's always talking about her dreams and the horror of her life. She expressed a lot of it in there. She was also a very wonderful painter when it comes to painting, you know, still lifes. That was actually, you know, she's one of the best still lifes painters in the world. So I really like her paintings, her flowers, because like I said, she really looked for the abundance of life. She didn't let her own personal tragic story stop her from expressing beauty and love and everything else. Over here, she made two coconuts, and you see the coconut crying. And then she goes, I painted with all my heart, Frida Kahlo. Her real name was Carmen Frida Kahlo y Calderon. She was a Carmen. So that's how come I also identify with her. But she just dropped it and signed Frida Kahlo sometime. And then she painted flowers and birds and butterflies and lots of beautiful things. She was very prolific as a painter. In her short life, she must have had over, and this is her last painting in 1954, just before she died. No, this is next to the list. The last one says, Viva la vida, which means long live life. And then she couldn't paint anymore.
What does that mean?
La novia que se espanta de ver la vida abierta. The bride is, how to say, se espanta?
Surprise,
that's right. To see life unfold itself. And then you see this coconut here looks like a little animal, the bird, the papayas open. This coconut here looks like another animal there. Bananas that are, and then here's a praying mantis. And then over here she says, Frida Kahlo painted 1954. And then the fruit of the earth, she just kept herself busy with painting. This is one of her last paintings too. And again, we see night and day, the sun and the moon. She always had this theme of duality. Plates of fruit. This is tuna. This is the fruit of the cactus. The prickly pear cactus. And this is her last painting, and she says, Long live life, Frida Kahlo, with all my love, Mexico, in 1954. So this is her last painting. When she died, she was finishing a portrait of Trotsky, but she never finished it. And her last words in her diary was, I have achieved a lot, I'll be able to paint, I love Diego more than I love myself, and my will is great, and my will remain.
How could she be in bed? I mean, lying down or propped up, or was
she
sitting?
Well, if you ever go to her house, can you turn it off? Well, maybe we can have the lights on this. If you ever go to her house, you see that she made, her father helped her. She made all kinds of props, like she'd be in bed and she had a canopy on top of it. She had a mirror on top of her bed so she could see herself and paint it. And then she had an easel that laid on top of her legs so she could paint.
Oh.
Yeah. And living in Mexico and being married to Diego, she had money, so she always had maids to help her move herself, you know, to dress herself. She couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, her life deteriorated as she aged.
What did she die from?
She had pneumonia.
And gangrene, right?
And gangrene. She had gangrene, she had her leg cut off. As a matter of fact, the entry in her diet is, in her diary that day when they cut off her left leg, was like, piernas para que te quiero si tengo alas para volar. Legs, why do I need you? I have, my imagination had wings to fly. That was her entry in her diary the day that they said she had gangrene and it was spreading and coming all the way over. And so she, they had to amputate her leg. And it was a big blow to her vanity, as you can imagine. She's a woman. Yeah. And she loved to go out and party. She was the life of the party everywhere she went. People talk about she had this cackle when she always telling jokes and she was always scandalous, you know, and everybody loved her. And she was...
Except Diego.
Oh, Diego loved all women.
Including her, yes.
I know Diego Rivera went to experiment with Cubism a bit.
Yes.
And he was in France and he met... but she apparently never did. Did she go with him to areas where he was exposed to Cubism too?
Well, she went. She went to France with him.
She went by herself.
And she went by herself too. She was exposed
to
all of that, but her style was already determined. I mean, when you think about it, the thing she painted was, you know, still lives and herself. That's all. She really didn't paint a lot. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just stuck on the relationship between Diego and Frida Kahlo, and I just
it was a toxic relationship.
What was she thinking? I don't.
What was she thinking?
Like maybe I know it's probably really obviously really complicated, but. Why did she go back to him?
She asked herself that question many times.
Yeah.
The first time she fell in love with him, she was 17 years old.
Okay.
And she was going to a prep school in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. Her father would pay for her to go to school. And that's where she met the big Diego. He was already married. He had already a bad reputation of being a womanizer. Mm-hmm. And he was painting a mural at the prep school downtown Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And she was in love with him. He was a bigger than life figure, you know, physically and in his art.
Mm-hmm.
So she painted that portrait of herself and brought it for him to see. And he said, wow, this is a great painting, keep painting. And he just dismissed her because she was just a little 17-year-old high school student, you know. That's what it was. But she kept after him. There was something there in that relationship. So when the accident happened and she was bedridden and she kept painting, his words kept coming back into her saying, oh, I have to keep painting because he told me I'm a good painter and I have to keep painting. So that's what saved her. So when she healed herself to a certain extent and she could walk again, she went back to look for him. And then she's the one who pursued him. He was already married, divorced, he had affairs, he had children. He was a 40-year-old man. And an artist had lived all over the world. He had lived in France, he had lived in Russia. So he was not really interested in getting married to anybody, but she somehow, you know, was able to seduce him or think that, you know, there was something special about her. And
he was the most famous artist in the world at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had gotten more publicity internationally than any other artist. And when he came to the United States, he was highly celebrated in the U.S. as this exotic, revolutionary artist from Mexico.
So then why did he fall for this 20-year-old?
Well, I think politics played a big thing there.
Just the communist party.
Well, the communist philosophy, the fact that they were coming in the world, it was a very exciting world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 1920s and the 30s in Mexico, you know, the world is changing, industrialization is taking place, communism is happening in Russia. There's all kinds of talks and excitement about the power of the workers. And the mural movement that I was telling you about,
mm-hmm.
he actually painted her in a couple of the murals in Mexico City. She's painted with wearing a hat with a red star and, you know, she was very militant, very militant. She, regardless of how she could walk, if she did not, she would march in the streets of Mexico City for the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's the one who organized things. She was very much of an organizer. So there is that politics, you know, in the intertwined into their art and their passion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what brought them together.
Did she admire any women?
Oh, not only she admired women, she had affairs with a few women. Yes.
Including his mistresses.
Yeah, his mistresses. Yeah. They were very scandalous in Mexico City. How's that?
Was she close with her own mom?
Not really. She talks about being closer to her dad, that her father really understood her soul. Her father's the one who helped her get painting and helped her explore painting. And her mother is just, you know, doesn't really appear a lot in her life yet.
That's an interesting, you know, the fact that you keep wondering about this relationship between him and her, because she was a cripple,
mm-hmm.
right? And in a wheelchair and always in pain. And you know, if she wasn't miserable and suffering, then she would drink and become alive, become life of the party. But no one understood the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his fame and his notoriety, women threw themselves all over them. Even movie stars, the biggest movie stars in Mexico at that time and in the United States too, had flings with Diego, but he would always come back to Frida. People couldn't understand what he saw in her, and nobody could understand what she saw in him.
Well, at her death, you know, he told her that all his friends that she was the only one who understood his soul, that Frida was the one who understood his soul.
So it's that sort of promiscuity in the relationship, just sort of a given, just like, this is what we do, and I'm going to love you for it, and you're going to love me for it. And
she forgave him. I mean, she caught him with her own sister.
Okay.
You know? But yet she had enough inside her to just forgive and say, well, I can see how you're attracted to him because he's a magnetic personality, blah, blah, blah. But he forgave the sister. She forgave the sister, forgave Diego, and went back to him. She tried to live without him. And in her diary, she explores how is life without Diego. They had a very toxic relationship. You know? But she asked herself that yet she couldn't live without him. Because when he came, that's all that, you know, when you see paintings of after paintings of her with him painted in her third eye, that's all she yearned for, was for him. And even at the end, she says, I love Diego more than I love myself.
I don't understand something. You know, my grandmother was born, was married in 1929, and I lived with them, my grandparents. And when they were married in 29, that was kind of the good times. And then the Great Depression took place.
Right.
And their lives were forever changed. You know, I don't know if anybody knows people in that era, but you know, if you were, you know, a young married person in 31, 32, it was really hard. You think we're bad economic times now. I mean, they worried about eating, and they lived in the United States. And so I haven't heard one little thing about, you know, their economic status. It sounded like everything went fine even through the 30s, because it didn't affect them. So I was surprised to hear if they were married at that time, it didn't affect them, because the people that I know through that era were tremendously impacted by the Depression.
They were not affected. She doesn't talk about any. She talks about the fact that when she was not with Diego, she could not sell paintings for as much as he could. And she resented the fact that his paintings, because he's a man and he's so famous, could go for so much more than her paintings. She tried to sell portraits and tried to do things of people to feed herself, and she really couldn't. So when he came back and said, I'm going to marry you again, she was ready to marry him again because of that financial blanket that he offered. But they didn't really suffer financially. I didn't know anywhere where it talks about they have, you know, he got commissions, big commissions from the Rockefellers, from other people around the country, in Mexico. He was very revered. He got commissions all the time. He always had money.
All he had to do was do a small painting.
Was he formally trained?
Diego? Yes, he went to the Sorbonne to study art in 1911 or something like that. He was there. Yes, you had a question.
How was she feeling about death? Was she prepared towards the end of her life?
She prepared all her life. Yeah. She sang about death. She painted about death. So all her life, she knew that death was just around the corner.
But she knew that her pneumonia would probably lead to
it. She knew that was it. That was the end. That her body. I mean, think about it. She went through 30, operations in her back. Her biggest dream was to have a baby by Diego. She always wanted to have a child by Diego, and she had many bad miscarriages. Like where she'd go to the hospital, she had to stay. Like she had one in Chicago when he was there painting, and she was in the hospital for like 2 weeks. And you know, she was also a very good friends of Luther Burbank, and they have extensive correspondence with each other about, you know who he is, about all the plants that, you know. She had all this interesting correspondence with very, very incredible philosophers and scientists and people. You know, she was very, very well-rounded. And yes, you have a question.
You said that they painted murals, not murals. And did she contribute in some way?
She never painted. I don't think she painted. She was the inspiration, because she was painted in a couple of the murals, but she never painted anything.
He painted her.
He painted
her in the murals.
Yeah, he painted her image in the murals. And yes.
I'm just wondering if she was in better health, if she would have been less dependent on him. You know, the fact that she was on her back, and you know, she was extremely limited.
Oh yes.
Whether she might have felt more like going off on her own, and I don't know.
She tried for a while, didn't she?
Well, she tried to make it, you know, when she went to France by herself, she was not married to Diego at that point, and she thought she could make, and she was revered as an artist in France. You know, she was given a show, she sold her painting, she came out on the cover of Vogue magazine in 1939, something like that. So she was revered, she was very exotic looking because of her Indian dresses and the way she, you know, did her hair, flowers and everything. So she was a big hit in Europe, and she sold quite a few of her paintings. But yet, when she came back to Mexico, the first ever show that she had in Mexico was the year that she died. And by then, she was bedridden. She had to be driven in a truck all the way to Bellas Artes downtown. Her bed was put in a truck, and she came to her art, you know, they had a reception for her in her bed because she couldn't even go into the wheelchair anymore. And she says, finally, my country recognizes me. Well, she was 47 years old a few months before her death. Yeah, Julie.
If you look at Diego's paintings, they just sort of jump off the walls at you with his politics. There's no doubt about where he is politically, right?
Right.
But I was looking this time at your slides, and there's not much that's overtly political about Frida's paintings.
Well,
do you see the politics in there, and where is it?
Well, her politics is her life.
Yeah, yeah.
I think she lived her politics, even her attraction to this toxic relationship. You know, the politics was stronger than all the hurt. But her paintings does not reflect her politics, as opposed to Diego's, whose paintings are, you know, overtly political.
Is there something about the celebration of indigenous people in her paintings that has an implicit politics about it?
Well, what I think about her politics is her duality, how she looks at two worlds, how she feels very much she's in the middle of being an indigenous person and an European person. You know, how she has mom and dad, and she painted her whole tree there, and she always had that duality in her paintings. To me, she's expressing that political view of, you know, I identify with that, being a person of mixed heritage myself. I have that political view where I can look this way or I can look this way, but most of the time I'm looking both ways. So that's where I see her politics. And then she was adamant, she was one of the organizers of the Communist Party. She organized all the marches and everything. Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about the icon she's become?
Oh.
And what she represents to primarily women throughout the U.S., in the U.S. and throughout the world?
Okay, so she died in 1954. Like I said, nobody really knew about her. She was always Diego Rivera's wife. Oh, they have a wife, you know. The whole thing is like, what? He has a wife? Nobody knew about her. Because she was always, you know, in the background. She could not move very well, but when she came, she took over because she was little, but she had this incredible presence about herself. So in the 1980s, early 1980s, Aiden Herrera wrote a very seminal book about her, about Frida Kahlo. And all of a sudden, the world was ready for a woman icon. I mean, she's the only Mexican artist that was put on a U.S. stamp. And here's a woman of mixed heritage, a woman who was scandalous. She dated men and women. She drank and she smoked, you know, and she's on a U.S. stamp. Then, go figure that. Then the other thing is she became highly collectible. Madonna started buying her paintings like a vengeance. You know, everybody who's anybody who has any money is going to want a Frida Kahlo painting. And the prices just skyrocket. And then she also became sort of like the most well-known icon for women's rights or, you know, women's studies, gender studies. They're always talking about Frida Kahlo. Now there's, you know, in the 80s there was only one book about her. Now there's probably 20 books about Frida Kahlo. Everything about Frida, she just, you know, went bigger than life. Yes?
The movie, Frida, it's very interesting for people who are maybe just discovering
that. Yes, and that was another thing. Salma Hayek took about 10 years that she knew, Salma Hayek, when she came to America, that she wanted to do Frida Kahlo and she wanted to portray Frida Kahlo.
So did Madonna.
And so did Madonna, that's right. So it took a whole time. Madonna wanted to be Frida, and so did Salma. So there was actually, and then Luisa Valdez was going to produce.
Yeah, there was a huge struggle amongst a lot of different artists fighting to get the rights, to get the script, who was going to play Frida. And it caused a big uproar in Mexico because it was done in English. They wanted it, the Mexican style should be done in Spanish, not in English. In Mexico, they call the movie Frida Light.
Yeah. Have they done their own rendition?
Yeah, but not a big blockbuster movie.
No. And then when Salma did it, you know, it was nominated for an Oscar. They got the Oscar for the music, and the music was incredible music. They used glass harp and all kinds of, you know, beautiful instruments, and they won the Oscar. Yes.
Speaking of the movie and the Mexican impression of the American version, how is she accepted in Mexico? She was an ardent communist. Her painting didn't show it, but it's who she was.
Well, they idolize her too, and they want her back. They think, why are the Americans idolizing Frida? She's ours, and she belongs to us.
So there wasn't a contingent she was largely embraced in Mexico despite her politics, or
yes, Mexicans do embrace her. Yeah, they do embrace her very much so. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you is, like, here we fast forward. There's a group of women artists in Phoenix. We are called the Phoenix Fridas. And I'm one of the women in this group. And actually, there's a craft movement going around the United States of women crafters. There's the Austin Craft Mafia, the New York Craft, you know, Donna, something like that. So they're all these cute names. So a couple of my girlfriends and I came up with the name of Phoenix Fridas, and we get inspiration from her. And now we do events where we dress like Frida, and we help raise the profile. We do fundraising for other nonprofit organizations in our community, with utilizing, hosted by the Phoenix Frida, and everybody shows up because they want to see us dressed as Fridas. I mean, and then we always do work that you know, is inspired by her. Like some of my jewelry, I make real bulky, big jewelry, you know, because I like the way she used to wear it. So I think this Frida thing is going on. We haven't seen the end of it yet. And now she's more famous than Diego, which is unheard of, because during his lifetime, he was the most famous artist in the world. I mean, he'd go to Europe, and all the European artists would just, Diego, because of his politics, because he was so adamant about it, and he was very explicit about it. So now she's the biggest inspiration. She's a bigger artist than he was.
Yes. But part of that, isn't it, that there didn't used to be much, women would not become famous anyway.
That's right.
That's a change too.
Well, the world has changed.
Right.
So I feel like those 30 years after her death, from 1954 to 1984, she was in dormant. You know, nobody really talked about it. Nobody even remembered her. Diego died in, what, 76? You were in Mexico. So after he died, nobody even talked about her. And then it wasn't until the 1980s, this book comes out, and all of a sudden start looking at her. And she has, I showed you the nice paintings. But she painted her miscarriages graphically, you know, very, very graphically. And some of it was very hard to look at. You know, she did not hide anything. She painted, you know, maybe that's part of her politics. She painted herself, which was the thing she knew best. And so she was very scandalous in that way, too.
But the population wouldn't have been ready for something like that.
That's right. It wasn't until the year 2000 the Metropolitan Art Museum in New York did an exhibition of her, and then everybody wanted to buy her paintings, and the thing just exploded, you know. The Japanese own a few of her paintings, and then, you know, all these rich people. Yes?
I have a good question.
Yes.
Do you feel like people in Mexico, feel like, oh no, like, the U.S. is, you know, taking what is art? I mean, is it like an ugly?
It's more like Salma came to America and made a movie about their Saint Frida, right? So they are kind of conflicted about it. They wish it had been a Mexican production. They wish it had been in Spanish, but then it ended up being Salma Hayek and being in English.
Okay, so it's not a huge, like...
No, it's not a huge.
Okay. My second question is, did she have other artistic influences? She seems so, like, individual, you know?
I don't think she did
anybody that she says that she, like, admired.
Well, she had other interests, like I said, with Luther Burbank. She had an extensive correspondence with him.
About artistic influences.
But artistic influences, no. She really didn't have any other artistic influences. Well, back then, you know, she was just like, this is, D.A. would introduce her, this is my wife, and all she can paint is herself. He would say that. And so people go, oh, okay, she paints herself, that's it. So nobody thought much about her at all. And he did not help raise her profile because he was so into himself, period.
He probably wanted her to have a big profile.
Yeah. Yes.
Is the Rockefeller mural restored, or is that still painted?
I can't remember that.
I don't know if it's restored in the U.S. They repainted it in Mexico City.
He repainted it
in Mexico City in Bellas Artes.
Because Rockefeller painted over.
Yeah.
He kept saying, you cannot, because he put Stalin.
Right.
He put Stalin in the mural. And Rockefeller said, you cannot put a communist leader in America. And he says, well, you asked me to come as an artist and paint, and I painted it. And I'm not changing. So then Rockefeller said, here, take your money and leave. I don't want you here anymore. And he painted over. They talk about restoring that mural. But I don't know if they have. But he went back to Mexico, and he painted the same mural at Bellas Artes. School of Art in Mexico City. Yes.
How are you most, you know, you're driven in this area. You know, your husband does the masks and the you know, his shows and whatever else he does. And why is this a passion of yours? You know, what is the duality? Is what? Why are you so interested?
I see a lot of things that I have in common with Frida. First of all, my name is Carmen. Her name is Carmen.
Okay.
You know, she was married to a bigger than life artist, so it's. So am I. Luckily, he's not a philanderer.
Oh.
I left out.
I'm a philanthropist.
and then it took a while for me to discover my art, because for a long time I was just the artist's wife. Oh, you're married to Larko, you know. So that was the thing. And then when I started doing jewelry, it was kind of like a craft for me. It was like a passing the time. And then, as the more I made and the more my children grew and let me do my bead work, then I had more time to really explore my art and create something different and feel like I am doing something completely different. I am inspired by her, you know, the fact that regardless of how much pain she was, how much hurt she was, she painted. She tried to paint a world better than what she lived. She tried to paint it herself more beautiful because she had that unibrow. You know, and she was not an attractive woman. You know, she had a leg shorter than the other, and she was very small. She smoked. She smoked a lot. I don't. So anyway, there's a certain similarities of my life and her life, but I try to think that I'm not as I call her Frida la Sufrida, because she suffered more than anybody else I know. And I realized that I have a pretty nice life with my husband, and he doesn't make me suffer, and I don't have any physical ailments that will keep me in bed for that long time, and plus I have 3 children and never had kids. Yes.
I find it fascinating that she's become such a huge icon throughout the world, especially in the U.S. She became an icon in the U.S. Amongst a lot of people, but for example, I think it was in the San Francisco area, amongst the lesbian community. She's kind of like saint, the patron saint of lesbians in San Francisco. And so they really made her extremely popular in the U.S. and then throughout the world. And then later in Mexico, she became famous once she gained that notoriety in the U.S. But you have a lot of women like Carmen and now another younger generation coming along that hold her in such high esteem as an inspirational force in their lives. And then she goes beyond all those borders throughout the world. You see images of her in Japan, in Indonesia, even in India. Throughout the world, she's a symbol for women who have overcome suffering and pain and made something of themselves as artists.
And then going back to what Julie was saying about the politics, I feel like she didn't really express the politics in her life when she was alive in her paintings, but after her death, she became a political icon. You know, she became that, you know, the fact that she could overcome her suffering through her paintings, and her paintings outlived her. And she said that in her diary at the end, I will remain past my life. And you know, when I first read that, I thought, oh, yeah, right. And then I look at it, and she's unfolding in front of all of us. You know, She became the stamp, she became the icon in San Francisco. We see her image everywhere. We go to Japan, to Indonesia, to any place, we see Frida Kahlo. Everybody knows who Frida Kahlo is. And then every year now, we do an event, we celebrate her birthday in Phoenix, the Phoenix Fridas do. And we do it in a small community bookstore. Gets packed. And you wouldn't believe men and women come dressed as Frida Kahlo. We even started a new style called the Fridos. You know, the Fridos. We have a lot of guys who says, I want to dress like Frida.
Which just is a politics follow-up. Is there, what, in the American Communist Party of the 1920s and 30s, there was, they didn't call it this at this point, there was a nascent feminism. They didn't call it feminism, but there was some struggle at least about are men and women equal, and can we express that in some political way, right? Yeah. Was that true in the Mexican Communist Party as well? And is Frida sort of painting herself and putting a set of female images out there in the context of some conversation that's political in the Communist Party of Mexico?
I haven't really read that yet, but I know that she was a trailblazer. She would dress like a man, you know, in the 30s. She would wear her father's trousers and blazer and go out and put her hair down. There's pictures of her dressed as a man. And she would march the streets as a man because she knew she couldn't do it as a woman. So she did that. I also know that she really pushed the envelope about having women be involved in the Communist Party in Mexico. But I haven't really read how she changed anything. I know that she pushed it and with herself and her friends. They would go and get dressed and go march in the streets, dressed as men.
Is her jewelry restored or in museums or is all private?
Her costume.
Her costume, you know what? They just found a trunk of her clothes about 2 years ago at the Casa Azul. And I talked to a woman who's one of the people who wrote the book, but she's also a curator in a museum, and she said when they opened, they could smell the cigarette smell. It was just amazing. So there's a lot of pieces of hers in her house in Coyoacán, Mexico. If you ever go to Mexico City, her house and Diego house, they lived in separate houses, by the way, even when they were married, because she needed her space and her place to paint, and he needed his house and his privacy. So they lived around the corner from each other, the same neighborhood.
There was a bridge between two of both houses.
Yeah, there was a bridge between the houses. That's not they visit each other through the bridge. And in her house, a lot of the pieces are on the wall, a lot of her paintings, her early drawings, and some of her jewelry, but not a lot. I didn't see a lot of her jewelry. Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder what happened to it. Yeah. That's a good question.
One thing I'd like to share before it ends, one of my favorite images that I read about, but it's not in the movie, and I wish it would have been in the movie because it would have been the most beautiful ending. And when she died and they cremated her, and Diego was there and all the famous people, artists of Mexico, and all the politicians were there, and they put her into the furnace. As they wheeled her into the furnace, because of the heat or whatever, she sat up.
Yeah.
And then her hair burst into flames.
Wow. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what I read. That's the last
that's
image they saw of her.
It should be true, even if it is.
No, more than one people wrote about it. Dr. Otto wrote about it, Diego wrote about it, and in Hagen Herrera's book, she talks about it. That the last image was that she would stand up with her hair.
She sat up.
Since she was so kind of out there with kind of a rejection of Catholicism, was there any kind of repression of her work, or you know, is there any?
No, there's always been an anti-Catholic.
Oh, anti-Catholic.
She ran around with a lot of the intellectuals of the era. You know, her circle of friends in Mexico City was always the painters, the intellectuals, the politicians, and people who really questioned the establishment. So she was in her element. You know, her religiousness never came into play. It was her politics and her imagery that survived her. Well, thank you so much for.
Thank you.